So I go through the agenda here and we'll introduce everybody, go through roll call and any guest introductions that we have. So as I said earlier, Kelsey will be a couple minutes late and she's calling in. So I'm not sure. I don't know, Alexandra, if it has to come to you and then you click her in, or what, how does that work exactly? But she's gonna do that. And this is Jay Chester. I'm here. Stacy?
Here.
Okay. And then Barbara Anderson will not make it today. She is available if we get into a situation where we need to vote, but I didn't see anything on the agenda at this point in time. So go there. Haven't heard anything from John. Is John on the line, on the in the meeting? So switch my...
I don't believe so.
Okay. We have Spencer. All right. Dave.
Here.
I thought so. Yeah. Okay. And Felix, and I heard Felix, you chimed in, right?
Yeah.
So we've got then at this point in time, we got three board members here, so we don't have a quorum. As soon as Kelsey gets here, we will, or John, either one. All right, so then we'll go through the other folks. Dale. Here, Nicole. Yeah, you're having trouble hearing me. Let me see if I can turn this up a little bit. Is that any better for anybody? No. Okay. All right, well, I'll just have to yell or something, maybe. We'll see what goes on. Alexandra, you said Delanne's not going to make it?
Correct. Delanne is not going to be in attendance, and Nicole may be late.
All right, and I just saw John Spencer jump on.
Hello.
John.
Good to see y'all.
All right, so that's all the attendees that we have. Now, do we have any guests on the meeting? Let me see if I can get the list of participants here up.
Yes, we do have some guest speakers today.
Yeah, Chad Drago is on.
Yep, I'm here. Good afternoon.
And Jessica Kretzinger. And I apologize for anybody's name I butcher. I'm from Texas, so I'll get these kind of screwed up sometimes.
You got my name right. I'm here.
Okay. Thank you. You're very nice. All right. Justin Maynard.
Yes, I'm here. I'm actually the county's clean water division manager.
All right.
I'm here because some members of the Clean Water Commission are here to present. So.
Great. And then Maria Lamana. You still show yourself mute, so.
Yeah, I had to find it. Yes, I'm here.
All right. Then we have Matt Jones.
Yeah, hi everybody. Matt here from the Clean Water Commission as well.
Right. Obviously Rocky. I should add him to the list there, Alexander, in some way, shape, or form, as the newly minted Parksland director.
Just a division manager, sir.
Division manager, sorry.
President accounted for.
All right, I think that's all the new names. We have two attendees, so do we have anybody doing the... I'm sorry, I got a little out of line here. Let's see. September 14th, John's here now, so we have a quorum, so we can adopt the September 14th meeting minutes. Everybody review those, and we get, can I get a motion?
Move to approve, Spencer.
All right, John Spencer's moved. Do I have a second?
I'll second, Dave.
Hey, Dave seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Another reminder to submit your volunteer hours. I believe we were briefed a couple meetings ago on how to do that electronically. So if you would, to make sure you get your hours in. And now we're to the public comment side of things. Alexandra, do we have anybody that would make any comments? I think we had two participants. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I did receive one item in the Parks Advisory inbox from Jim Kautz regarding the Salmon Safe certification standards. And the public comment reads, who would fund the requirements outlined on page 21, section 3, Wildlife Waste Control Program?
Okay.
And let me unmute the other attendees to see if they have a comment. Okay, I've manually unmuted both call-in users to the Parks Advisory Board meeting for October 12th. Do either of you have a public comment you'd like to submit? You are unmuted at this time.
This is Jim Kautz. Can you hear me?
Yes.
What's the event password for this? WebEx keep asking me for the password.
1012, I believe.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. I will shut up now.
Anybody else on public comments? Okay, I think our, I think the question Mr. Kelt asked would be answered. We'll let the clean water folks during new business present, and then we'll have, we'll go from there. Kelsey did join, I just saw in the chat. So Kelsey, are you on the phone?
No, I'm here, but I'm multitasking, and I'll be audio mostly and listening, but you won't see my mask face, okay?
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure we got you covered. Get your mask covered. There you go. Whatever. Anyway, it's no good mask jokes anymore. You can't hardly figure those out. All right. Manager's report. Rocky, I'll let you bail me out here.
Thank you, sir. For the record, Rocky Houston, Parks and Lands Division Manager, part of Public Works here in Clark County, Washington. So this is my first meeting with the Park Advisory Board in this role. So I'll just provide a general overview of my mini resume, I guess we'll call it. So I've been in government for 21 years. I've done a variety of things through that period of time. Majority of that has been in the park and recreation field. So this is my 16th, 17th year in recreation, I believe. I worked at Oregon State Parks for about 12 years, doing a variety of tasks as the State Trails Coordinator, regional planning. I've moved on to Douglas County Parks as their director. It's the largest campground system for a county park system in the state of Oregon. It's pretty close to one of the largest park systems in Oregon as well. And so managed that portfolio. It was self-sufficient, so we didn't get any general funds. So that was a wonderful opportunity to find grants and improve an old system that had been around since the 40s and a lot of development in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. So there's a lot of deferred maintenance to work on that. Had a great time meeting the budget and growing the system, improving our utilization rate of our campgrounds by by over 100% in that 5-year period, and still maintaining budget and all those other fun things that occurs in recreation. Then let's see, during that time I took on the lands department, so that dealt with acquiring and selling of county property, leases, forestry, and tax foreclosures, selling of those. So that was last 2 years was added to my portfolio. Came up here to Clark County for family reasons. It's been about 3 months now, three and a half months. Was initially detailed to be the planning and development manager here, work on the PROS plan, capital improvement plan, future master plans. And gosh darn it, they gave me the opportunity to step into this role, and it's been an exciting 3 weeks, maybe close to 4 weeks, you know, this week. So it's been a great time learning the system, learning all the different rules and nuances here in Washington. So it's I'm glad to be aboard. Still been negligent in getting out and reaching out to all of the board members, and I will be doing that and learning more and more about our system and what we can do to continue to move forward with that. And of course, later today, we'll be talking about that in our PROS plan presentation. So in departmental updates and goals, you know, it's really all about staff. We had nine vacancies, which is almost, well, we only have 54 full-time employees. So nine is it's a big number. So we've been working diligently to try to whittle that down. One of those, some of that work is on here tonight. So Jessica is our new OA3. So she's taken over and she's in week two. So I know Alex is excited, and we're doing a lot of training to get cross-trained and get up to speed to there, and allow Alex to do some other tasks that we've been neglecting. We've got two offers out currently for grounds crew. So those positions are primarily working in our sort of our special properties, grounds, campus, fairgrounds work. So Luke Jensen and those, we had two vacancies, and got sounds like two great candidates, and can't wait to get them on board and meet everyone and get them working. We've got a second interview out for our environmental permitting program coordinator too. That position has been vacant for about four or five months. And so we're hopefully this week we'll get to a point where we can make an offer and move forward in filling that position, which is very critical because environmental permitting is sort of that keystone group in any project delivery. So they do all that permitting paperwork, SEPA, NEPA, county code, a whole laundry list of stuff that they work on. We've got two interviews being set up in our weed management program. I think they're weed management inspectors, a 9-month and a full year. So hopefully here in the next week or two, we'll be able to get that calendared, get those invites out, and hopefully get some offers on that. And then my position that I had, the planning and development manager, we're getting that set up to where we can get that out and hopefully get some interviews set up here very shortly. So it looks like, oh, and we have a planner. Our planner two position is hired, and she will start on Monday. So that's gonna be great. And I get to do the first big tour of downtown Franklin office. So I've been there once, you know, with all the COVID stuff. So hopefully I can remember where it is and show her around HR and public works there. The other things we're working on, of course, is just getting up to speed with all the things we're doing. You know, there's a fire hose inside of an ocean sort of experience right now, and we're all working on that and moving. And you know, it's kind of like Jell-O because of COVID and all these other constraints that we're all dealing with. So it's been tough and exciting. We just completed the first four site visits yesterday to do our sort of inspections and assessment, capital assessments. So trying to make sure our tool works so that when we go out and get that data for next year, as we update and do an annual update on our CIP. So that's pretty exciting. And it's just business as usual. You know, grass is starting to stop grow. We're starting to get those leaves falling. With the rain that we have right now, weeds are starting to grow again. So we're out there taking care of a lot of weeds throughout the county properties, doing just that normal cyclical stuff. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Chair.
All right. So takes care of the manager's report, the new manager's report. Call it. All right, unfinished business. First item up is upcoming board vacancies. Kelsey, are you still there? Muted, so maybe you're busy. All right, I will walk through this with everybody. We have four, I believe we have four board positions up for renewal this at the end of this term. Myself, Kelsey, Barbara Anderson, and Dave Weston. And I believe we were gonna talk today about the process or out the steps for advertising and then, or the kind of the schedule steps for advertising and then selection of board members due to vacancies. And I will start this off by saying that I will not be running again for board position. Been at this 6 years, and I think it's time that some other folks get a shot at this and get some other folks involved in the community and everything. I will let the other board members whose positions are coming up state their intentions, and then we'll circle back and have the conversation.
It's Kelsey. I already said during the summer that I most likely wasn't going to renew my term, so I will be leaving as well with my full-time job and trying to mom and soccer practice and charter review commission. It's a lot, so I'm joining Jay and going out to pasture.
This is Dave. I as well will not be applying for a renewal.
Okay, and then I can't speak for Barbara. We will touch base with her and see where her position is and what her thoughts are at the time. So either way, there's obviously gonna be some holes to fill on the board. I guess maybe it's Jessica now or Alexandra, and along with Rocky. I don't remember, and Kelsey, maybe you do specifically, the process, except that, you know, it's advertised, the positions are advertised, then you submit your letter of interest and resume, and then there's a review period. Now, I think the last time several of us from the board were involved in some of the reviews or the selection of the top candidates, and then they are interviewed. So have I missed anything, Kelsey, that you can remember, or Alexander and Rocky?
No, that was pretty much it. My only concern, though, doing it this way is, so the applications went in, the executive team, myself, Jay, and Dave were the ones who reviewed them along with staff and made our recommendation to the county manager. I'm concerned, though. Well, so yes, I think the timing will work because we have to nominate our new board members in December, and technically our terms expire December 31st. So unfortunately, there's only three remaining Parks Board members, right? If I'm doing my math right, Stacy, John, and Felix. So you all probably have to be on the executive board. I'll let you figure that out amongst yourselves. or I won't presume to assume that, and maybe you'll have the new folks come on, but either way, you three should be the ones in charge of helping determine who the top applicants should be forwarded to the county manager, I would say.
And don't we have to elect officers in December also, I believe?
Yeah, technically we do. I don't know what that looks like if there's only three board members left and none of them are interested in being on the executive board. So I don't know if we can defer that then to the, I mean, our bylaws are kind of loosey-goosey anyways. We could defer, you could defer it till you have the new board seated in January or February. I'll let the remaining folks speak to that.
I nominate Felix for president and secretary.
Thanks, John.
That was an acceptance. All in favor?
I'm not sure that's exactly how it goes, but all right. So that's item A. Item B, the PAB meeting logistics. Kelsey, was this where we were going to? You know, we usually take December off or, you know, the November. I mean, we take the holidays off, if you will, and don't reconvene until January. But with these vacancies and everything, I you know, to me, it's up to, you know, John, you, Felix, and Stacy, what you guys want to do as far as having another meeting in December. You know, obviously, we can have a meeting in November. That's pretty straightforward. But, or we, you know, we can have the meeting in December and figure things out, or not. I don't know. I can't in good conscience drive that question or that to a point. And you know, I'll kind of turn it over to you, John, and Stacy, and Felix, and you guys, and kind of, you know, or Rocky for that matter. I mean, if Rocky, you feel like we need to have a December meeting, it's up to you guys.
Well, it says per county code, not our bylaws, that we elect officers in December of each year, including a chairman. We need to change that language, chair, vice chair, and secretary, and any other officers. So we could run it up the flagpole to see if we can defer that to January based off a quorum of future members. So, I mean, that may be a justification, but per code, that is the requirement. And we can take that offline and research that and circle around with this new executive committee. In the interim, we can make sure that we got the recruitment out if we don't already, Alex, Jessica, and start getting potential applicants.
I would suggest we follow that advice from Rocky, but we go ahead and set a, if nothing else, just a brief half hour meeting in December to resolve that issue.
I agree with that.
Okay. So we'll have the November meeting, and then we'll have a December meeting, perhaps a short December meeting, but you know, we set the agenda a couple of weeks before each meeting anyway, so we can, after the November meeting, we can set the agenda. Kelsey and I can work with everybody to do that. So all right, and then
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Those board empty board positions can go out. I mean, can they go out like tomorrow, theoretically, or do we have to wait for a certain date?
I don't know the answer to that, to be honest.
So I think we could start that recruitment now. So we'll put that together and try to make sure the recruitment is representative of what we're seeking in regards to what it says in the county code, as well as what it's saying in the kind of our mission and values are here for in the PROS plan.
And ideally, it would be nice if we had a closing date of, let's say, December 15th, and then had the candidates forwarded to the county manager's office right after that, so they can hopefully start the 1st of January, because you might not be able to have any efficient meetings because you won't have a quorum. And so it kind of needs to be in place before the second Tuesday of January, or you won't have a parks board.
Yeah. Well, I think if we can get, with that being the case, we should probably have a 30-day or a 6-week, so we're getting application deadline by middle of November. We have time to review, make a recommendation on to county manager, and then hopefully have that all wrapped up before our December meeting, fingers crossed, which would, and we could hedge the bet, I guess, in trying to, I guess I need to learn what that process is to get to the county manager, and what that timeline is going to be, so we can make sure we're backtracking it so that we have an approval before Christmas and time to notify the nominee, the new appointed representative, what the meeting schedule is.
I also have a question about how those positions are advertised. I have previously seen it in the Columbian, and I assume it's on the website as well. Are there other local papers in Clark County, like the Reflector, that can be advertised in as well?
Yeah, we could look at what our standard policy is from our communications team to see where we usually go with this, and then add to that. So yes, you know, and I'd hope there's a few listservs we can get out there on as well, that you know, through social media spreads like wildfire, and we get a robust response rate.
Okay. All right. And I just noticed in our new business, there's a future nominations discussion, so we can circle back to that if we need to when we get there. But before that, we have the pros plan review. Rocky, I think you're up.
Yeah, and right before that, in regards to the meeting logistics, at the last meeting, there was an inquiry in regards to, can we utilize a different virtual tool? And so we've researched that with our IT department, and we've got approval to use Teams, which is the product that most of the county staff use on a day-to-day basis. What we planned on doing is we need to beta test it to make sure it's working with others, and hopefully it's working better than this platform has worked for you guys over the last few months. So I was thinking that we would try it out at our agenda huddle and see if it works there. And unless there's another, we want to set up another meeting just to kind of beta test it out with a broader group of PAB members.
I think that's good news for everybody, to be honest with you. And you know, we do. Trying it out on the agenda meeting is no problem, I think, unless Alexander or Jessica or Kelsey has a problem. I don't have a problem with it, so it's a good idea.
Okay.
So.
Well, good. We're just going to celebrate all the small successes.
There you go.
And everyone will have to have a dad joke before we leave today. So. Or a parent joke. Not parent joke. All right. So I needed to hit the share button. Is that right, Alex? My screen.
Correct.
And it'll tell me if it's 1 or 2. Oh, yep. It's doing that. Perfect. All right. Do you guys see my screen? Thumbs up. I only see Alex right now. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. So this is the pros plan update. So last month, we kind of gave a broad process, talked about some of the changes to a gosh darn thing called goals and objectives. And then now we've presented to you all a shiny draft plan of what was it, 200 some pages? I can't remember. Lots of pages. So I just want to walk through this draft plan at a very high level, and then we can get into some any questions that you guys may have. The PROS plan is just one of several plans that we need to get adopted and actions that we need to take in order to get it finalized and move forward to the RCO so that we're eligible for grants and really prepare ourselves for the next 6 years. And so one of those plans is the capital improvement plan. It's a cornerstone to the objectives in development and major maintenance, dealing with that deferred maintenance component. And we are pretty darn close in getting it all wrapped up. It has a little bit more level of detail in regards to where the money's coming from that we didn't need in the PROS plan. So that's why it's stalled out a little bit later, just to be frank. So we're working late fall of this year to get that reviewed. We'll hopefully next month we'll be presenting that to you, and then on to County Council. The Natural Areas Acquisition Plan adoption, which was formerly known as the Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan, has been reviewed. You guys were a large part in regards to setting up those priorities for the Conservation Futures Legacy Land funding, and that plan has been drafted. And again, you should be seeing that very, very shortly. Again, we will review whether, for some reason I thought it was already recommended to move forward, and it's, but we'll confirm that and see whether or not that needs to come forward to you guys as well before we bring it to council. We're taking, we found some minor edits. You know, I left some Easter eggs in there just for people to see that editing a document is tough, you know. So we've got a few minor edits that we're working on. But once we get that completed, we will be bringing that forward to you next month. Actually, we finalized it, but we'll be moving it for your recommendation next month. It says October here, and that should say November, so I apologize. Then we've had a workshop with the Planning Commission last Thursday, and we'll have a hearing next Thursday on their review of the PROS plan. The feedback we got through the workshop was productive and constructive in regards to some of the things that we're looking at, and we'll get into that here very shortly. Of course, then we'll go to County Council somewhere between November and January. Hopefully we'll have an initial work session and then bring it on for adoption. Once we get the PROS plan and the capital plan, that triggers comprehensive plan updates. So the comp plan will need to be updated to include some of the different directions and initiatives and funding strategies we have to implement the plan. And then, of course, hopefully in February, we'll get that on to the RCO or earlier. We have a March deadline of 2022 to get that submitted to them. And worst case scenario, we could kick that can down to June before they review their grants, but we'd really like to have that in and adopted or before we apply for any grants in the next cycle. So the concepts from the plan were numerous, and we got a lot of feedback. And as we've talked in last month, I think a bit, we got a lot of feedback. And as you guys know, over the last 2 years, I think we almost doubled our amount of feedback on our survey. We did a lot of social media outreach, a lot of engagement in this format, one-on-ones. And through that came a lot of great ideas. And some of those ideas developed some concepts for our park system. So the first one that we need to look at and engage in more with is making sure that operation and maintenance capacity is considered in capital development. So we've developed a lot of parks since 2005, I think 34 of them. And with that, we have not grown our operation and maintenance team at the same rate. That's created some opportunities for us to meet our level of service in regard to maintenance. And so typically a maintenance management plan is developed for each park to identify what needs to be done and what that FTE level is. So how many hours we need to do that. We need to make sure that we're doing that so that as we're building new parks and our existing system, quite frankly, is we have the right amount of staff to make sure we're hitting that level of service. And if not, we have to have that tough discussion and figuring out, well, what do we do? And the best way is, of course, is as we're adding to the systems, we're being transparent and identifying what that level of staffing is needed, what those resources are, so we can have that tough discussion of should we develop it? How do we continue to make that? Otherwise, you know, you have ketchup soup, right? You just keep thinning it down until we're not meeting the standards that we've set forward for ourselves. Park impact fee program updates. So we've heard a lot, you guys have as well, that there's a strong desire in the development community to have a PIF credit, but it's just not allowed currently. And we have to go through a process and get a legislative action through county council to consider any changes. And so we need to lay that groundwork, make sure we've got that in place to then move forward and see what that needs to look like. The other thing is that the GCPD boundary realignment. So the concept here is that, from my understanding, is back in 05, when the Metropolitan Park District, known as the Greater Clark Parks District, was formed, that it matched the urban growth boundary. And I think, sorry, that's an Oregon term, I apologize, but that boundary. And it matched. However, that boundary changes with time. And the MPD or the GCBT is designed to meet the urban recreational needs. And if that boundary goes beyond where our district is, we're not able to really meet the service level for that urban area. And so, you know, we should look to see if should a realignment that matches that boundary, so we don't have to go out to vote every time. Sorry, I'm talking with my hands too much in this format. To bring those and line those together. And so again, that's discussions that need to occur and initiatives potentially to do that. So park funding, operational and capital assessments. So, you know, we talked just a little bit earlier about how we've really grown our park system. What happens when you build a lot of new stuff is it starts to age. And as things age, they have something called deferred maintenance, minor maintenance, major maintenance. Eventually you have to replace things. And the useful life on equipment varies from 10, 15, 20, 30, 75 years, just depends upon what it is. But as that continues to climb, we have to be ready for it. So we need to be able to assess what those current and future operational needs to make those determinations, discussions in regards to, are we setting ourselves up to make sure that we can continue to manage what we have? And if not, how do we do it? Do we change our level of service? You know, there's a lot of different ways to work on that. But essentially it gets back to that first slide talking about the maintenance management plan. And so we need to make sure that we've got a systematic approach where we're looking at that capital planning, we're looking at operational need, and we're having those discussions as we move forward, you know, and we can see it's coming. We see the wall. It's just making sure that we're making those decisions and having that discussion about what are those priorities. So some of the standards discussions, so there was a lot of discussion in there in assessing, you know, how do we conform with National Park Service or general numbers versus how we are now. And we followed that for the most part. So for example, in our urban parks, the acreage per 1,000 citizens is 6.25, 6.5 acres is our current level of service for natural areas, neighborhood parks, and community parks. The national average is 10 acres per 1,000. But as we've grown from a community of, and back in 05, of a couple 100,000 people, now we're over 500,000. Another 30 years, we may be at 800,000 people. Land they just don't make more of. They don't let us move our county line. And as such, that infill within our districts in that urban area is getting smaller and smaller. There's less land to develop. And so this map in front of you here is a heat map. And so this was a concept and then that I think was started a long time ago. And I just changed the color scheme, to be honest, and then integrated other things. So industrial lands aren't shown, so we don't have a park that's around a bunch of industrial property. It's around residential areas. We looked at an assessment the county did a few years ago in regards to the buildable land. So again, trying to look at those lands that are suitable for development, for housing, and again, utilizing that. With that, what this shows is that within 1 mile of a neighborhood park, so the darker the red, the farther you are from a park. And the little green little things, it's small, so it may be hard to see, is our park assets. And so if you see green, you see there's a lot of clear gray around it, meaning that we're meeting our level of service. And the darker the color, the farther you are. Now, I'll point out that this map is flawed. In that, so if you look up here in District 10, there's this property that's been there since the 1989-94 called HB Fuller. We don't own that property, so it wasn't included in this assessment. So that's a flaw in the data. So we have a property right there that functions as a community park. It has our sign on it, but again, it's not showing for that level of service. The other thing is through this whole area here is we have Salmon Creek, that whole Greenway property and Klein Line. And again, some of those properties, and we have some properties that are assets that are on school property or adjacent to schools, again, through this area that shows us some of this area. So there's further refinement we need to do, but again, this is showing a walkability to where you're within a quarter to a mile away versus that 1,000 acreage per 1,000 ratio. And so, you know, as things get tighter, you know, that level of service is something we need to continue to look at, as well as, you know, is it the acreage size that matters? So does the park have to be 3 acres to meet our minimum for our PIF? Or is there some flexibility in that based off of we can't find a 3-acre parcel? So do we buy an acre, buy another acre next to it, and eventually over several years get to that? So, you know, I think this was an interesting way of looking at our community parks, our neighborhood parks, and the combination in regards to meeting that level of service and a way to approach it differently in the future. Trail standards. So trails were identified as one of the highest needed items in the recreational survey. People are using our parks. On average, people are coming into our parks 94%, I believe, use our parks once a month. And a lot of us were walking and hiking and want that experience. And so, but we don't have a standard for it. So that standard hurts us in a couple different ways. We can't have a PIF or PIF credit for trails if we don't have a standard set up. So that's some work that's been on the department's list for a while, and something that, again, is to try to make the combine. So if there are changes, we have that set up to facilitate meeting the community's needs. A big portion of PRO's plan is setting up a 6-year capital plan and identifying what are we going to accomplish over the next 6 years. You guys will recall the 2015 plan was very aspirational. I think there's about 29 or $49 million in projects identified that were going to be accomplished in 6 years. We did a lot. We did quite a bit, but we didn't hit that mark by any means. That's more of like a 20-year objective. And so here we're looking at our allocations that we're currently at, what our obligations are, and things that are in being programmed right now between our legacy lands program, our capital plan, and again, looking at that major maintenance. And so we've set up a program here that's going to focus about $1.8 million on preventive maintenance. Again, preventive maintenance is extending the useful life of an existing asset. So that's putting a new roof on a shelter. It's filling the potholes in the gravel parking lot. If they're major, if they're minor, that's routine maintenance. Major maintenance is where we're replacing or repairing something significantly. So we're replacing a whole bathroom. We are ripping out a whole road and parking lot and sort of doing it all over and laying it all out right. Kind of what needs to be done at Hazeldale. Those projects cost a lot more, but they have a much longer lifespan once they are put in. Development, of course, is when we're building new parks. So we're adding a new recreational amenity to an existing park or a new park. And then, of course, acquisition is acquiring green space or natural areas as well as recreational lands. And that number is high because we get about $2.6 million a year through legacy lands as well as our PIF and REIT funding as well to help offset some of that. When we break that down in the project, and if you can read this, I applaud you because it's blurry to me. I need to get glasses, I think. But I did have it as a separate attachment out online, so hopefully you're able to view that and blow that up. But again, this is breaking it down by project and adding. And I think I shared with you guys last month sort of a less detailed framework. And so, again, pavement management, structural preservation, pavement preservation, vegetation management, and park amenity preservation is about $300,000 we're looking to spend every year.
Rocky, can I interrupt here?
Yeah.
So we've got 300 grand for structural preservation and zero for pavement, vegetation, and park amenities.
No, that's a bucket. So for all of those four things, it's a single. So it isn't real clear. Good catch.
All right.
I was trying to show that as a bucket for all of those.
Got it.
Because we don't have individual projects scheduled out for the next 6 years. That's pretty gosh darn difficult for us at this moment. So that's why we just got a bucket. Much as we have roughly a bucket of 700,000 that we're trying to spend on major maintenance. And that's going to change. I'll be honest with everyone is that we're going to be doing a heck of a lot of work over the next year. And in the next budget cycle, there's going to be a more robust list of project needs and deferred maintenance lists. And there'll be a lot more to it. And we'll update the CIP and go through that annual process is where we'll be heading. So major maintenance, you know, it's Louisville Park. We've got an issue with the entrance and it gets congested. So how can we short term figure out how to improve that? We've got bridges that need repairs. You know, we've got a maintenance bridge in Lackamas Lake that we can't drive over. We need to do a structural assessment and figure out if we can repair it or if we have to replace it. We've got the Moulton Falls pedestrian bridge that's been on the list for quite a while that we need to start working and getting some major maintenance done to it so it's still safe for the public. You know, we've got the shelters at Hazeldale. Both of those shelters are kind of keeping the water off, but they're in need of a lot of repairs. You know, we've got concrete moving and doing what it does over years around trees, you know, out at Vancouver Lake and Frenchman's Bar. So, you know, we've got a variety list. We've got a much longer list of major maintenance needs to get accomplished, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, you know, and that's going to be the case as we continue to try to move. And especially in our regional parks, you know, that's something that we don't have this dedicated funding to continue to move for that. So that's something we're going to have to work on. In development, Phillida is going out to bid here soon. Hawkinson, the same thing for the golf course. Cozy Camp, got a whole new park being developed out there. It's been paused due to COVID. Harmony Sports Park, we got a fairly large safety and parking improvement project planned that probably will move into the 2023 fiscal year. Camp Bonneville, that master planning process, again, we're getting close to be able to start that. And, you know, that'll probably take a better part of 2 or 3 years as we go through that process. Curtain Creek Community Park. So we're just going through the design phase right now and hopefully get that out for 2024 construction. We got Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park that is up there in the north, just north of where the two highways merge, and Pleasant Valley. That's sort of northeast little section as well, and Cougar Creek, which is on the west side of I-5. You guys probably know where all these parks are. I'm learning, so I keep practicing the location. And most of the acquisition that you're seeing there are from the legacy land priorities, and we have some acquisitions that we need to get accomplished in a few of our districts as well. So overall, you're seeing anywhere from $5 to almost $10 million a year in capital work being accomplished. And then when we kind of wrangle that out, that same sort of spending level or a little less on some things, you know, we're looking at about $150,000 planned today over the next 20 years. Right now for our capital plan, what we're trying to do is in the 6 years is attach the REIT, PIF, grant, other funding sources to the project specifically and make sure we know what our needs are, and we're presenting that forward to the department director, county manager, and on to council for future budget requests. So with that, I will turn it over to you guys to ask away. And, do I need to stop sharing? That'll probably be easier. So.
Okay, anybody got questions?
So I'll jump in there and start. Rocky, unfortunately, you're new to this and at the end of a frustrating process for all of us. I encourage others to disagree with me, but I doubt anybody will when I say that we have had very little input on the PROS plan. And I would love to have some input before I've got a plan in front of me to approve. What are our options for putting it out a little bit and actually having a work session or two on it?
Well, John, I'll ask it to you this way. Do we want to seek grant funding next year for projects?
Yeah, we're at that point.
And I apologize, you're right. I'm the guy that came in, and when I was wearing my other hat, it was, we need to get this thing out of the barn. It sat, you know, we're over 2 years into a process. And I know there were, I feel what you are, what you're saying. And what I would say is the PROS plan is a strategic plan. So it's providing guidance, but we're gonna have a lot of time over the next 6 years in preparation of our next one to continue to learn and grow and move the department or division forward to meet the recreational needs. So I don't view it as prescriptive, but as an arrow.
Is it possible to approve it and turn right back around and jump into a new cycle on it? Budget issue there.
Yeah, definitely. It's a heavy lift and a lot of staff time, and that would take us away from accomplishing the development and those other planning things, the master plans for Pleasant Valley and some of those other things. So it's always a balance. And in reviewing the minutes over the last couple of years, and COVID has not been a friend for any of this process for any of us, but it appears that there were quite a few sessions with the team, and just from my own knowledge, because I wasn't part of it here, is that were those too narrow in view, or, you know, I guess what would you really like to chew on and get into?
Well, you know, I haven't even seen the plan yet, so I don't even know what to chew on yet.
So did you not get the email that I sent out to you? Did I have the wrong email?
Yeah, well, no, if you've sent it out recently, then I probably have a plan. I apologize. I got a number of things going on personally over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. So it was about 2 weeks ago, I think I sent it out.
Well, that was about when I went in for knee surgery.
It's hard reading when you're covering, I understand.
Yeah, all right. So we do at least have the plan on our desk to review that.
Yes, sir.
All
right. And it's on our webpage as well. So if you don't have it in your email box, we do have it out on our under the PAB tab or the pros. I don't think it's called pros, but under that that tab that we have for it on our website.
So Rocky, this is Dave. And I know you got thrown into this and it's been a mess and COVID didn't help, but I think what John's pointing out, and hopefully it can be fixed with the next cycle, I hope, is we did meet, we had a couple little work sessions. It was real early in the process. Lots of ideas were thrown out, and then it was just like the communication basically turned off aside from Galena told us once or twice, a couple of small updates, and it was mostly like, you're not gonna get your TIF credits. I mean, that was essentially the updates. It wasn't very much communication in there. So okay. Definitely with the next cycle, hopefully there could be more of those interactions with the you know, consultant and that stuff. So
yeah,
I get what it.
Yeah, it appears that pause was pressed in December of 2020 until July 12th. When I was hired, and now we've stitched together a Frankenstein, but understood.
So that would then we understand why there was no communication. So,
yeah. So is there any? This is Jay Chester. Can we submit comments to you? I mean, I believe you said, Rocky, that November is when it was going to our November meeting. We were going to come back to the PAB and get our recommendation or to move forward or.
Yeah, so if you have any comments in the next 2 weeks would be the most beneficial. So for example, Barbara has sent me an email with some feedback. Seeing how she's not here, you know, she's wanting more discussion or engagement on accessibility and ADA components. You know, we have it as a goal and some initiatives there, but that she was hoping that was going to be a broader component. So that was an element that she brought forward as well. She caught a couple of my Easter eggs in there. So.
And the other thing is, can you kind of tell us, well, I'll use Barbara as an example because I did have a conversation with her today. She was looking for a specific guidance language, if you will, i.e. an example she used in ADA was that, you know, each trailhead will have or will be ADA accessible. Can we still get, I mean, is this the type of plan that can handle those kind of statements? Because those are more, in my mind, level of service statements, and I'm not sure that's the best place in this plan, you know, best to be put in this type of a plan. Just like we were talking about the TIF. TIF credits, and you know, we were looking toward, you know, I was toward more of a language allowing it or building the allowance of the capability of having a term PIF credit. I don't know what TIF is. I don't know why I keep saying PIF credits. In that, you know. And maybe it's as simple as also it can be put in there that, you know, during the development agreement negotiations between a developer and the county, you can, you know, identify PIF credits. I don't know. But I think some of us get an idea that at this plan and this level, we can put in specific goals, but I'm not sure that's the best use of this plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in regards to all trailheads should meet, you know, all new trailheads should meet ADA guidelines, you know, is more of a standard in regards to construction and components. The the issue that we get into is if we say thou shalt in a strategic plan, it becomes something we're held accountable to. And if we don't have the resources, and if something was, trailhead was constructed 30 years ago and it isn't accessible, or the intended user group is not for accessible use, let's say it's a free ride mountain bike course and none of the facility is accessible. I mean, if we build a new trailhead today, there are ADA standards that we have to meet in regards to planning, just to get the building permit and get through that process. So what it does say in the plan is that we will conduct a transition plan for ADA, which has an inventory of all of our current assets, identifying where we are negligent, or not negligent, that's the wrong word, deficient in ADA compliance, and developing a plan to work that out, and then working that plan. So that's this strategic plan, I think, is identifying those kernels or those pearls on a necklace that leads to having that complete system. Just like it's saying we need to work on the PIF, we in this planning process don't have authority to make it so. We're pointing and providing the data to help that discussion moving forward, much like with an objective or a goal was to have those park standards to meet accessibility, et cetera. That would be the initiative. The additional thing is, you know, it's assessing all those recreational trends, those recreational needs, looking at what the community needs and desires, and then putting that together with future development goals to meet those objectives. And so it's at a 25,000 to 15,000 foot level from a planning perspective. If that answers your question.
Yep, it does. I just kind of wanted to get a perspective on it. Does anybody else have questions on the PROS plan?
I do. Kelsey does. Sorry. I was driving when you said this part, so trying to listen, I couldn't look at the screen. When you were discussing park standards and level of service, I agree with you, something like HB Fuller, yes, that should be utilized. But were you implying also that the PROS plan should include using schools to help meet level of service?
No, what I was meaning is that there are several schools where we have a neighborhood park at, and so we have a portion that's there, and some of that's under agreement, and some of that's property we own. And so those properties that we don't own weren't included in the rubric there in that scale. And that was something that was set up before I was here, and I discovered too late to go back in and readjust the heat map.
Okay, because we have, I mean, I'm, for example, Geyser and Eisenhower Elementary Schools have like an adjacent Clark County small park to it. So yeah. Discussing counting the county owned park property in our levels of service, which they already should be, but not changing anything to include school grounds.
It doesn't include school grounds. It's just,
yeah.
I think if you drive by it today, and it has a sign that says GCPD, you know, Clark County Parks, it should be managed because it's meeting the level of service. That asset is helping us meet that level of service. And what I'm saying is in the heat map that you saw, some of those that we manage, don't own, aren't included.
Okay, I see. I'm good. Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything else on the PROS plan?
No, sir.
So, yeah. All right, Rocky. So again, if we get our comments in the next 2 weeks, that helps you at least get in a timeliness manner, and then it'll circle back to us in November at our November meeting asking PAB to make a recommendation. That's the path forward. All right. Anything else on unfinished business? All right, we'll move on to new business. The Salmon Safe Initiative, Clean Water Commission. But is it Matt? You're gonna who's leading that? whoever's leading it, take over.
Yes, this is Matt. Thank you. I can. I think I'm leading here. I'm joined today here with my colleagues from the commission, Marie, and our Clean Water Division Manager, Justin. And we are here to talk to you just a little bit about the Salmon Safe initiative. We have not gotten along the process any further down the road than just simply a discussion. So we're also here to have a discussion with you about it and see if we can gain any feedback to see if there's anything that the Parks Advisory Board would like to offer us, even if it's comments about whether this is a fruitful endeavor or not. The Clean Water, Clark County's Clean Water Commission's mission statement is to improve and protect all of Clark County's watersheds, and this includes the quality of surface water resources. Salmon Safe Certification is a nonprofit that's based out of Portland that offers certification for farms, vineyards, parks, recreational areas, schools, and in a couple of other areas. They've done a certification for parks that I know of for King County, Port of Seattle, Parks, Eugene, I think I said Portland, but if I didn't, I'm saying Portland. And so we're thinking about looking at the possibility from a clean water perspective of seeking the Salmon Safe certification in the parks area. As I'm sure this board is more aware than anyone that all of our parks reside in salmon watersheds, critical salmon habitat watersheds, with a number of our fabulous parks lying directly along prime salmon habitat in the actual waterways. You know, I'm just thinking real quick off the top of my head, Klein Line, Frenchman's Bar, Happa Park, Louisville, those just a couple to name a few for salmonid waterways. The certification certainly has a cost associated with it. They don't do the certification for free. You know, we haven't delved any further into the process yet, other than just simply reaching out to Salmon Safe and getting just a really rough estimate of what that certification process entails, and a really rough estimate of, I should call it really a range of costs for that certification. The certifiers do come in and look at a number of areas to see if we're compliant with them, and you know, who knows where we are at. We certainly might be already compliant with them. It, you know, it'd be great if it was a really easy certification process and Salmon Safe came in and said, you know, we comply with all these practices and bestowed the Salmon Safe certification on us. That that I don't know. So I guess rather than talking more, are there any questions that I can take regarding any specifics?
So out over at the Port of Camp Swashugal, we got Salmon Safe certified for our waterfront trail.
Okay.
And as I remember it, it was a nice attaboy to add for the project, but I got the impression from staff that it was more effort than it was.
Okay.
I don't say no, I just say go with caution.
Okay. No, this is helpful feedback. Thank you.
And just for whatever it's worth, my 2 cents is, I'd love to say we could be certified, but we didn't waste the money to do it.
Okay. I guess, you know, that it's a good conversation to have, I think, because, you know, I think a lot of people ask the question of, okay, what do we get for this? You know, I think there's a little bit of this is just my own personal view, a little bit of a value piece there, just to say that it's sort of the attaboy, as you mentioned, to say, hey, yes, this is something that's important to us, and it's important enough to us to attain this certification to be able to demonstrate to our constituents that we do indeed care about this. But yeah, this is very,
that is the other side of it. You actually, you know what would be, it might be one just to throw it out there to, you know, test it out on that park, Louisville Park or something, you know, one of the bigger parks, and say, you know, that where there's a lot of people around, that they'll actually see the sign, all that, whatever it's worth.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other comments or questions for us? I want to be respectful of your time here.
This is Stacy Kaiser, PAB member. I was just wondering kind of what that means actually in terms of what would they have to do to change their kind of daily operations to be compliant to something like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the, that's the big question. We don't know yet. You know, it could be, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we could, as far as daily operations, you know, we could be doing all of the things that Sam and Safe asks for, that they view as evidence/best practices. That I don't know. Or there could be a number of things that we would have to add to our practices. So it's a really big unknown, to be completely honest.
So this is Jay Chester. If we don't know what it takes to become salmon, you know, or the Safe Initiative compliant, how can we make a decision, or how can you make a decision to go forward without knowing what it would take to get there?
Yeah, well, let me clarify, and I probably was not clear, is that we do know they do provide standards, and we have standards. There's a 35-page standard document along with performance requirements related to those standards. I personally do not know how well parks are already aligned with those practice standards. You know, that would be something that we would have to have, maybe I would think would be a beneficial conversation with parks to look at these things and say, oh, hey, yeah, these standards, you know, we're doing a lot of these, or maybe all of them, or maybe we're not doing any of them, and maybe we're not ready, or we don't want to do Salmon Safe. So we do know what the standards are, and we do know the performance requirements. And I'm not sure if you have the document in your hand. I did email it to our program manager to send out. If you don't have it, I'm more than happy to resend that out for perusal. It's also available on their website under Parks and Rec, under, I think it is, sorry, give me just a second. It's salmonsafe.org. Pretty easy one.
I think this is Stacy Kaiser again. Wasn't it part of our agenda items? I'm pretty sure it was.
It was.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Great.
So there's a lengthy document with a lot of small font, at least if you're from my perspective, of how Salmon Safe would come in and assess your operations.
And a follow-up question, do we know of any other park group that's doing this, or is Salmon Safe Ridgefield, Vancouver?
I can't say for certainty. I don't think, you know, Salmon Safe is somewhat of a new initiative as far as I know. So I don't think there are a lot of parks in the Pacific Northwest. You know, I know there are the ones I think I mentioned off four. And those are the four I know of, and for all I know, those could be the only four. There could be more out there. That's certainly homework that I'm willing to do with the other Salmon Safe folks. Here in Clark County, I'm not sure if there are any municipalities or districts that are engaged in this. You know, my colleague Marie here, who's has some affiliation with the conservation district. Maybe you can speak to this a little bit, that you didn't work specifically with parks, but that the district worked with farms to obtain some Salmon Safe certification. Am I correct there in the county?
Yes.
Okay.
The Clark Conservation District had some funding and did some for the farms. And for them, they can sell their products, you know, with SAFE. So there's a little more incentive perhaps for them for the goodwill portion to be part of the program.
Chair, this is Rocky. In looking at their website, it appears they have no parks certified because they only identify park projects, one in Eugene, one in Portland, and one in Port of Seattle. So you'd think they would have be promoting those that are certified parks.
Yeah, Rocky, and I'm not sure if I got this is something maybe to clarify a point for me, whether I got the impression from them that those were parks that were certified.
So it looks like Eugene, I'm just going to throw this out there. This is Justin. City of Eugene Parks and Open Space Division, it looks like they have 4,500 acres of parks, if I'm reading this article right, and their park system earned that Salmon Safe certification.
I do apologize. Looking at their website, I thought it'd be this big.
And then Portland Parks and Rec as an organization also. It's not just projects. That's Portland Parks and Rec has it. I'm scrolling through. There's a blog segment that has articles about when these various organizations achieved it. So.
Yeah, I guess I got confused because when I'm on the become certified for a park, it just says featured projects. You think it's a featured certified parks and Eugene.
Yeah, I can certainly see that as a point of where one could make assumptions either way. And so they are a nonprofit. They do this because of course they believe in it, but at the same time, you know, as part of getting that assessment, you know, it does create some time on their part. They have to pay professionals to perform the assessment, so there is an associated fee with this. And of course, you know, Rocky, I was listening to your comments about resources. I certainly would imagine that it would take resources from the county, from parks. You know, as John was talking about, it took a little bit of time in his experience. You know, is parks feels that this is something worth investigating more, not necessarily not committing to at this point, but investigating more. You know, we certainly could, from my subgroup, the outreach group, and I'm sure from other folks in the Clean Water Commission, investigate how we could help and mitigate burdens to parks. If this is something we wanted to talk about more, and that's sort of the focus of the conversation here today, if parks isn't on board, then maybe that steers the conversation another way or ends it, who knows. But it's a good to know.
Okay, anything else?
I'll also just throw out there that it may be worth at least somebody in parks looking into whether this certification adds weight to grant applications. I know Rocky brought up grants earlier. If it looks good on those, then as far as something that we'd get out of it, beyond just good job, gold star, it's just a thought that comes to mind.
Sure. And once again, it takes resources. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rocky, not to create work for you, but I'm happy to circle back around with you. And if there's stuff to investigate, you know, sort of put the burden of some of that work or applies to back on me to do some legwork if I can be helpful.
Yeah, you know, and I think the question I have, and I think it's already been spoken, is besides feeling good, what does it do to move forward the division for parks? So what other benefits? And if this is their program promoting, they should have knowledge that it helps us with RCO grants or it helps us with Bonneville or, you know, these other programs.
I mean, there's definitely those are the good sort of tangible ROIs to ask, but, you know, I would also just You know, again, this is a personal perspective, but just encourage people to think about the, you know, definitely the feel good piece of, but to our constituents about demonstrating our environmental stewardship. You know, of course, I have some bias here, but as somebody who spends, I don't know, probably about 200 days on the river, on our rivers, in our parks a year, you know, this is something I would love to see, but that's my own personal. Personal bias.
Right. You know, and I guess where I'm at, Matt, is that is this taking away from me acquiring another property or another easement along the East Fork of the Lewis River through our legacy lands program? You know, is, you know, in regards to shifting those things. And so can we do a better return for our constituents through acquiring additional land along Lake River, or acquiring property along the Columbia River, again, to keep that in perpetuity for that natural resource. Not to say that the other elements are, but, you know, it's just trying to, it's always tough in choosing which sticks to hang on to.
Sure. Yeah. It's definitely mutually, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. You know, it'd be great if we could do both, of course. And, you know, I would say, you know, it goes back also to aligning with the strategy, not only for parks and clean water, but for the county, and how this would align with our strategy as a county, whether it's something we want to pursue to demonstrate that environmental stewardship, to ensure that we're not only actually practicing it by having some sort of outside review / peer review, but demonstrating that to our constituents. But again, I'm happy to do a little bit more work on this if the advisory board thinks, you know, this is something they want to talk a little bit more about, or put that work on us. We're happy to do it. Just sort of here to get that feedback of what your feelings are about it at this point. And I understand you have very preliminary information.
Well, I think we would, you know, if you develop more information and we get, you know, it's, I think somebody, Rocky or somebody said ROI, you know, benefit cost ratio or something that would tell us or give us a clear guidance on the benefits of going after this certification. And, you know, I think Justin brought up the point of, you know, does it look good on the RCO grant applications? And if that's the case, then yeah, let's talk about it. But if it's a situation where it just makes us feel warm and fuzzy, you know, that priority, those of labor and funds may need to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you could help us get a little better understanding and of that, then yes, please come back and when you have that information and give us a pitch.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. The next item up is the MPD budget projections. Chad, you're up.
All right. Let me attempt to share here. So, what I am sharing here is, if you'll remember back a couple of months, I think it's been when Pat Lee was still here, I presented on the Conservation Futures Fund forecast. And, you know, this is just like that one, very, you know, the same format, same template that we like to maintain in Public Works. Only this one is for the MPD, Metropolitan Parks District Fund. And I figured I'd just give a, you know, a basic rundown of its components and just show you what's included, you know, what we're forecasting on here. What we like to do in the MPD fund is break it up in between the MPD parks or the district parks for which this MPD was created. And then we also have general fund parks or the regional parks, as they're better known as. In this fund, as far as revenues, the major source of revenue is going to be that MPD levy. So, you know, each year, we get, you know, around 3.7, you know, on up $1 million. And that is primarily to pay for the operations and maintenance of those district parks, those MPD parks within the district. You know, and it's probably the second largest piece of revenue that we get is for those regional parks. We do get a general fund contribution from the county to help maintain and operate those. And then, of course, you know, each of those sets of parks have their, you know, the fees and, you know, shelter rental revenue that they generate. So that also helps offset some of the costs of, you know, running those parks and maintaining them. As far as capital repairs, you know, like what Rocky had spoken about previously here earlier tonight, we do get some real estate excise tax, or actually REIT 2, not to be confused with REIT 1. We get some REIT 2 funds that come in to help cover those capital repairs. And, you know, each year, of course, you know, we have to roll forward those requests, those previous requests. And a lot of that is what Rocky is working on. Other components of revenue, just real basic here. Parks and land staff maintain a lot of the campus buildings and properties around the county. And so most of those are operated or owned, I guess you could say, by internal services. And so what Parks and Lands does is they bill internally to internal services to cover those costs plus some overhead. And that's what you're seeing here. But so this revenue here is basically an offset of some of the expenditures to, you know, to perform those services. Other than that, it's, you know, just some interest revenue. We maintain a healthy fund balance, so the fund does generate quite a bit of interest revenue. Moving on down to the expenditures, just like up top, we have MPD parks and the general fund or the regional parks. And this column here is the 2020 actual. So, you know, this is what was actually expended in 2020. And, you know, as you can see, MPD parks, you know, they definitely consume the, you know, the bulk of the expenditures. General fund parks a little less so. And really these line items are everything rolled into one. So this is a very simplified forecast that we're looking at here. This is all of the staff time, you know, salaries, benefits, any particular vendors that we might hire, you know, vendors to replace fences, for example, maybe that kind of thing, but it's all rolled up into these line items here. And then below that, we have a couple other little offshoots that are accounted for in this fund. And we have the volunteer coordination program, which I'm not very familiar with all of the duties of that program, but I know that they're the ones that go out and put up signs and among other activities to, you know, to kind of help get out the word, outreach, that kind of thing. We do have a line item for the parks administration, which is pretty much staff time spent on, you know, things other than operations and maintenance of these parks. We have a line item for the Heritage Farm Program. And then finally, as you saw up top here with the revenue that we bill to internal services, this is where we account for all that staff time, you know, to maintain the county campus buildings and properties. So that's basically, you know, the quick rundown. I do have some notes here. And well, actually, I think I may have covered everything. You know, as you can see, this fund balance, we take this from the comprehensive annual financial report that the county generates. And so, you know, you add the revenues, we subtract our expenditures, and we roll that forward to the next year. And so projected out, you know, to 2027 so far, what we're seeing is just a really clear picture of these parks, as Rocky alluded to earlier, you know, they cost a lot to maintain, and the revenue sources are eventually not going to be able to keep up with that. And so, you know, one of the things is the general fund transfers that we get plus the revenue that those regional parks generate is really, it's very close to being enough, but it's not always enough to completely offset, you know, the maintenance and operations for those, that set of parks. And so what we like to do at the end of each year in Public Works is compare, you know, what did we take in, what did we spend, and is there a need to ask for more general fund? But we haven't been doing that the last year or two because of, you know, the projected shortfalls in the general fund. And so I think all the departments are probably being asked to rein in that spending. And so I'm not sure we can count on getting any additional general fund dollars. And that's basically it. If you had any questions, I can try to answer those.
All right, so go ahead.
I was just going to ask John Spencer if he wants to go on the same tack that he and I like to go on when we speak of the MPD, or if he would like me to do it.
John would probably like you to do it. He stepped away and left a message in the chat window that said, I have to step away. I hope you all discuss the fact that the MPD was promised as a way to fund non-generally funded parks that it may well be illegal to have the general fund parks paid for from this fund.
Yes. So John was so on it. So Chad, you know, our board has had problems with this for years, because when we went to voters, we promised them that these maintenance funds would be secure, would fund the parks that the voters approved for the MPD. During the budget, like the recession issues of 2008, the general fund parks got moved into the MPD. So my question to you is, if those general fund parks disappeared from the MPD budget, is it okay to sustain the MPD parks then?
You know, I would say that just based on, so this line item here that I have, you know, for the property tax levy, we get that from our budget office. You know, they forecast, you know, what we'd be receiving. And so again, it's just a forecast, but I would say it's very close, you know, as far as the margin on that. You know, when you take in all the revenue that these parks generate, plus this MPD levy that we get every year, it's right about on, you know, on target as far as what it takes to maintain these parks. Margins again are razor thin. The costs of staff salary benefits obviously go up every year, which is what we factor into this, you know, a 3% increase every year. So eventually I would say that perhaps not, that the levy might not be enough to maintain, you know, the assets that we currently have. As far as, you know, but as far as, you know, what needs to be done, decisions that need to be made, well, I'm the numbers guy. I present numbers, and unfortunately, Eva's not here to answer those 30,000 foot questions. So I can definitely relay anything to her.
So Kelsey.
Yeah, go ahead, Rocky.
So is this the question in regards to, I believe it's the 14 parks that were already established and then were moved into the MPD back in, around 2010 or something like that?
So it wasn't very transparent to anyone why, yes, general fund parks got moved into the MPD, and it was to give the general fund a much needed break during that recession and recovering from the recession. However, I'm not sure, like John mentioned, if that's even legal. If it's not legal, it's definitely not best practices for how government should operate when you're going to voters and telling them you're going to be using this money to fund these developing parks maintenance, and then you dump 4 of the biggest users of maintenance in Clark County Parks into that fund. So, I mean, we as a board, whoever's been on it since I've been on it, since we formed, have been trying to fight this and get those parks out of the general fund parks back into the general fund. And I have Jay and myself have spoken to Eva about this, and, you know, she had expressed some concern about it as well. Like, this is not best practice. And so I just hate to hear that, oh, the MPD doesn't have enough money when these parks contribute to that reason, you know?
Right. You know, and I think in my baby tenure here, kind of what Chad was saying is that if those were removed, it would definitely improve and change the trajectory of do we have enough money, and as it is razor thin. But you know, I think the other thing that's not factored in right now into our projections is that deferred maintenance wave that's coming. And so with all those properties that have been developed that are within the MPD, that's something we need to, how do we repair and replace those swing sets, paths, you know, sprinkler systems, et cetera. And so that's another wrinkle, a wave with the capital planning that will be brought forward in the next year. So, but your point is correct. Yeah. And that was a policy decision above all of our pay grades. And, you know, I'm learning of all these little nuances, and I appreciate you unpacking that a bit for me.
Yeah, we're rarely not mad about anything, but this makes us mad. So.
Yeah, one of the line items that I snuck in here that I did factor in is these two for, you know, I guess, Rocky, you call them deferred maintenance, same thing as capital repairs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I did, this may not be the most up to date, but, you know, I did get something a while back from one of our park staff that deals with a lot of those issues that, you know, projected these things out. And so I've tried to include line items in the years as they've been projected, but I know those are just really flimsy numbers that could change.
Yeah, and I think, as I said earlier, we're going to be looking at that stuff and assessing that. And so I'm forecasting that we're going to see an increase in that preventative maintenance and major maintenance, deferred maintenance work over the next 10, 15 years. So.
But yeah, you know, to Kelsey's point, yeah, I would say the general fund parks are really, yeah, they're the boat anchor that's that's dragging the fund down, because the money, you know, the transfers that the fund gets from general fund just aren't enough to keep that up.
All right. Any other questions? Chad.
And I apologize. I will say I should have introduced myself first for anybody that doesn't know me here. I'm Chad Dragon. I'm a financial analyst with Clark County Public Works. So I do work for the county, and I work with Rocky.
Thank you for doing that. Okay. We've come to a new business, future nominations. Don't know that we need to discuss this again, or unless somebody's got an added thought to it. Okay. Just jumping out there. So I know we've lost a couple of people. So let's go to a roundtable discussion, and we'll start at the top. Kelsey?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for presenting today, everyone.
Hey, what's for dinner? Sorry, she's moved away from the screen. All right. I do not have anything else. Stacy, are you still here?
Yep, I've been here the whole time. I just turned my video off because our internet is pretty spotty here, so. I've learned that it works better that way. I don't know if you guys read the Columbian at all, but a PAB member was focused on in an article about a farm in Washougal. He's not here, he left, but anyway, I just wanted to mention that there was a really nice article about John and his wife and their farm in the Columbian a few weeks ago. And that's all I have.
Okay. And John did have knee surgery for everybody about 3 weeks, about 3 weeks ago, I think, had the ACL, one of his knees replaced. So maybe that was from all that heavy lifting of all the farm products he's been growing, and they've been growing it. Great. That's a great little place. All right. So John did leave. Dave? Anything?
Dave had to go pick up his daughter from daycare, so he's gone too.
Hey, Dave's not on. All right. Felix?
I don't have much. I'm just excited about the Teams. So we use Teams at work and it works better. So I'm just, I can't wait.
I echo that. That'll be super. Rocky, how about you? Anything to add?
No, just it's a big thank you for everyone. Appreciate all the support and information and look forward to continue to learn about the past and then focus on this future.
And anybody else on there? I don't want to kind of go through lists or anything, but well, not hearing anything else, we'll bring the meeting to close at 5:40. And everybody have a great rest of your evening, and a great rest of your week. Take care.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.